Hey everybody, it's me, the Vern here from Cinema Recall Podcast. I'm doing these intros sort of the same way my good buddy Chris Revel does for his podcast, Let's Chat with Chris Revel. This episode of Cinema Recall was originally recorded right around Christmas time, and I had on guests Mike and Chris of Casual Cinecast Podcast, and we talked about Tilda Swinton and our favorite roles that she has done. And I should let you know, folks, that this episode was originally part of That Moment Ends podcast network, but that is no longer in existence, so I'm taking a whole bunch of those episodes and moving them over to here, because now we're part of Anchor, which, by the way, is a really great platform if you want to host your own podcast. So just wanted to let you folks know about that. I'm going to do my best to remove any plugs for future episodes that I talk about on the show, just mainly because they're no longer future episodes. They're either episodes we've already done or episodes that are probably going to be later on. Same thing goes for our guests. They are most likely going to plug episodes that are no longer future episodes. They may be episodes that are on their back catalog. But be sure to follow Casual Cinecast Podcast. They are on Twitter, at Casual Cinecast. But I hope you all enjoy the episodes. Don't forget, we are on like Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and more. Hope you enjoy the show, folks. Goodbye. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, a brand new episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I'm your host, The Vern, and since it is so close to Christmas, I thought it would be a great idea to talk about movies with Tilda Swinton, because when I think about the holidays, I think about actress Tilda Swinton. And joining me for this episode, we have on here Mike and Chris from the Casual Cinecast Podcast. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
Now, just so the listeners out there can try to tell each person from, you know, the other one there, Chris, say hello to the folks there.
Hello, my name is Chris.
All right. And Mike, say hello.
Hello, my name is Mike.
Yes. These are the great gentlemen over at the show, Casual Cinecast Podcast. Really just an insightful, entertaining show. I love every episode they do, but maybe you can tell the listeners out there just a little bit more about what you do over there.
Sure, absolutely. So at the Casual Cinecast, every week we review usually a wide release movie, sometimes some of the more artsier movies, especially this time of year. And then about once a month, we put out a listener poll and choose one movie from the Criterion Collection to knock out as well.
And their latest one is on Tokyo Story, which I have never seen before. I've seen it on a bunch of lists. Very kind of curious to check that out there. Was that like the first time watch for you guys? Or
it was for our third host. We had seen it before, both Mike and I, but it's worth your time. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, a lot of these movies we get to revisit again for like the second time in the context of the show, being older and having watched more movies since the first time, and it pays off. So hopefully it's a good listen.
Go on there. The Casual Cinecast Podcast is on most of the platforms you find podcasts on. Stitcher, Spotify.
Yeah, we just got on Spotify.
Podomatic. Yep. I don't think you're on Podomatic, but I know you're on iTunes, Stitcher, most other podcast platforms. Check them out on Twitter at Casual Cinecast, and you'll find like updates on recent shows. But yeah, I do like checking out your Criterion episodes, but since I'm kind of behind on the Criterion Collection, I gotta just find episodes of movies that I have seen before. Like, I have not yet seen Tokyo Story. I know somewhat of what it's about, but I'm not really all that familiar. The last full episode I listened to was your thoughts about Creed 2. And the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and I gotta say, you gentlemen made me want to revisit that flick and maybe see in a different light, because I wasn't too keen on all the shorts there.
Oh yeah, and Buster Scruggs?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? If there's ever a time whenever you want to come on the show, come right ahead. We will have a healthy debate about the movie. It'll be fun.
Okay, good. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, we are going to get into our favorite moments of Tilda Swinton features, because I thought this would be a great idea. Actually, this is an episode that I wanted to do for like a while, like right after I saw the recent Suspiria movie. I really wanted us to do a show about Tilda Swinton, and it's kind of funny that we're doing this episode like probably the week before like my Christmas break. So I find that to be kind of funny that this is going to be kind of like our official Christmas episode. We're probably going to do another Christmas-like episode for other podcasts, but I find it kind of funny that we're going to do this one for Tilda Swinton. But we're going to get into that in just a moment, but we're going to take a small break. I got to play some ads from some great podcast shows, and then we'll be right back, all right?
We'll return after these messages.
I was having serious problems in the bedroom, and in the car, and on the bus. But I couldn't help but think there had to be something out there for people suffering just like me.
Podcast dysfunction affects 6 out of 7 cinema geeks out there, but there is help. The Simplistic Reviews Podcast.
Symptoms of the Simplistic Reviews Podcast may include loss of sleep, loss of hair, longer erections, less family get-together, bleeding of eyes, ears, and anus, divorce, hated by town folk, rash, the ability to drink alcohol and podcast at the same time, mansplaining, weight gain, weight loss, people with severe podcasting games, depression, happiness, growth of boobs and hair on chest, constant peeing, watery eyes, and 3 additional inches on your penis, and if you don't have a penis, you will now.
Thanks to the Simplistic Reviews Podcast, I'm no longer bored in the bedroom. Plus, I have a perpetual erection. Although I think I'm going blind.
The Simplistic Reviews Podcast. A small price to pay for entertainment.
Hi, this is Tony, the host of the Flicks X-Rayed Podcast. Each week, I am joined by guests.
Meow.
Hello.
Yo.
Why, hello there.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a roundtable discussion where we dig deep and X-ray a bunch of our favorite films and some really terrible ones, too. We really like to go back and take a look at films that may be forgotten, maybe in the past, and still lovable films. If you want, you can follow us on all the major platforms, iTunes, Google, Stitcher.
If you want to find out more, you can find us online at www.flixxray.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to reach out to us. Good night, Internet.
And we are back. Thank you, everyone, for checking out those other podcast shows. We are back now here at Cinema Recall, talking with Mike and Chris from the Casual Cinecast podcast. And our topic today is going to be on Tilda Swinton. She was born on November 5th, 1960. She was given the name Catherine Matilda Swinton. And before we get into our favorite moments, I'll ask you, Chris, what was the first movie you ever saw Tilda Swinton in?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting question. I probably saw movies, like Mike and I were just talking about, Young Adam. Ewan McGregor, and I know I saw that movie a long time ago and remember very little of it. I need to revisit it, but I didn't realize that Tilda Swinton was in it because I didn't know who she was at the time. So that's probably one of the first movies I ever saw with her, and that maybe Constantine.
Yeah, okay. Well, for me, it was a movie called The Deep End. I mean, that was probably the first movie I knew that she was a star in. But the actual first movie I saw her in was a movie called The War Zone. I don't know if any of you have seen this.
I have not.
Wait, but with Philip Roth? Is that the correct one?
I know The War Zone, it was a movie directed by Tim Roth.
Oh, yes, that's what, yeah.
And, you know, it deals about this son of this Irish family who discovers, you know, the ancestral relationships between his sister and his father. Yeah, it's, but she plays the mother of that. Yeah,
then I actually need to change my pick to that one because I saw that a long time ago as well, and I just didn't realize that she was in it.
Yeah, you know, I neither. It's like I saw the other movie I mentioned, The Deep End, and I saw Tilda Swinton's name. Like, you know, I know I recognize that face from this other movie that I watched earlier. That was The War Zone, and then after I saw that movie, The War Zone, and then I saw The Deep End, then I did see Young Adam, and then, like, Technolust, and then she kind of blew up when she started making, when she got the Academy Award for Michael Clayton. Yeah. And then after that, I started seeing her in much more, like, bigger movies, but once she won the Oscar for that, that's when I saw her more. Mike, how about you? You know the first?
Yeah, so I first saw her either in Constantine or The Beach. At least that's when I first became aware of who I was watching, right? I would probably say The Beach. In fact, I had forgotten she was even in that until I was doing research on Tilda Swinton. And I saw that she was in that, and I was like, oh, man. And I looked up a clip, and yeah, sure enough, she had a bigger part in that movie than I thought. Have either of you guys seen The Beach?
I have not.
Oh, okay.
I have.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That was like the Danny Boyle, Leo DiCaprio film. I don't think it was like a huge commercial success back in the day, but it's still, everyone's heard of it, you know? And then I guess probably Constantine is where I started really noticing, like, okay, this is Tilda Swinton. Because she played Gabriel, the fallen angel, and I thought she was really cool. She has like this, I don't know, this very unique look where she just kind of draws the eye, and she has got this very androgynous vibe about her, you know?
Why am I blanking on this one? The Lion Witch in the Wardrobe, the White Queen.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I never finished that series, but I remember the first two.
I remember the first one a lot, being really impressed by that movie, and I don't know why I have not finished the other ones. I really should have.
I think no one finished them, because I think they just stopped making them and never even finished the adaptation series, right?
Was she in all three of them?
I don't know. I don't think anyone saw.
I think she had smaller roles in the other two.
That's why I didn't really want to watch it, because she had such a big part in the first movie, and I thought that was great, but if they're going to turn her part down, I really don't want to watch it. And I find that even movies that I don't like that she's in, she kind of like elevates the material even more, like the movie Trainwreck.
Oh, yeah.
Not a big fan of the movie, but Tilda Swinton is great as like this publisher of this magazine. And I'm like, all right, I want to see a whole entire movie with just her in that, all right?
Yeah, I would love to see Tilda Swinton starring like her own comedy. Like leading a comedy.
Ooh.
I'd like to see if she could do it.
I think that would be a damn good idea. I love it. All right, well, if you gentlemen don't mind, I would like to hear your discussions on your favorite moments of Tilda Swinton features. And I'll start with you, Chris. Go, sir.
Yeah, so we need to talk about Kevin. Is, I think, her best role that she has had. Like, she's playing the same character in this role, but two very different times of her life, right? And just the way you can see her inner life function in that that film is so great. And my favorite scene of that film is kind of at the end, so I just wanted to... Spoilers, I guess, for We Need to Talk About Kevin. But is at the very last, where she's confronting her son, and it's just she has all this love for him, and it's just a really great scene that you get to see from her that moment.
You don't look happy.
Have I ever? I'm almost 18, aren't I?
What is it? Going to big school making you nervous?
Nervous? Do you know anything about those places?
Well, you managed it all so well. Tried as a minor. Out of your head on Prozac. You'll be out of there in a couple of years. You know what day it is today? Why they let me come and see you on a Monday?
Sure. It's my anniversary.
2 years. Plenty of time to think about it. I want you to tell me why
I used to think I knew. Now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, so we need to talk about Kevin is my favorite role of hers.
Well, yeah, I mean, what she says to Ezra Miller, because at the end of the movie, she's going to visit him in his jail cell, and she asks him point blankly why, and Ezra's Kevin says, you know, I used to have a reason, but now I'm not really sure anymore. And at the end of the scene, when, you know, she holds him, and you can tell all this, like, anger and confusion and fear and love for the son. In fact, this is the first time in a long time in this feature that she's been able to, like, hold her son close.
Exactly, yeah. And,
yeah, and also, just to go further on that, he is the only family she has left now.
Yeah.
He's killed everyone else. She doesn't have a husband or a daughter anymore.
Yeah.
So the one that murdered them and took them away is the only one she's got left. So there's like an extra layer of tragedy on top of it all, right? Because like this is like a hang-up that she's going to take with her until she dies, you know?
Yeah. And she's been kind of going through the alienation of everyone in town when they found out about the tragedy. It's been a while since I have seen this movie.
Me too.
But I do remember when it first came out and it having like a very profound effect. My favorite moment from this flick, this is not going to be my moment, but my favorite moment of this flick is when her baby won't stop crying. And there's a great sequence when she actually has to take her baby carriage out to this construction site and just stand there and listen to the jackhammers and all the noise to drown out the baby crying. That's how she can relax. And I find just the shot of that just to be her own struggles of parenting and all that. And I really just kind of enjoyed the visual of just that thing and how she tries to push through for this kid. And
yeah,
I don't know, it's like,
well, it's like she's not ready to be a mom, but she is, right? So yeah. She's like, she hasn't come to terms with it, but she has no choice but to. And
what I think is scary about this feature is the fact that this is not a demonic possession movie. You know, this is just like a kid, a regular kid who just grew up with these parents in me. I know parents always try to instill their values into their kids, but their kids don't always take up their same values. Like, I have a friend whose parents are ultra right-wing conservatives, and he is, like, a total left-wing liberal.
Yeah. Sounds similar to my own story.
Yeah, so you don't know, but, you know, I mean, like, parents never, like, you know, you may be the best parents in the world and whatnot there too, and you know your kids are trying to not be like you at all. So it just,
yeah, they're gonna end up being the people they're gonna be, and you just hope they're good.
Exactly, and I find that to be way more scarier than a lot of the movies with like problem childs. I think this one, we need to talk about Kevin and The Bad Seed are ones I like to play kind of like back to back.
Yeah, that's a good
with each other.
That's a good pairing.
Because you know the kid from The Bad Seed, you know, has nothing to do with like bad parenting at all.
She's just a bad seed.
That's exactly. So you know, I bet you in an alternate universe, the character from The Bad Seed, which I think is Patty McCormick. I know that's the actress name, but I don't remember the character's name.
Me neither.
Both her character and Ezra Miller's character will get together and they'll go on double dates. they would actually fall in love and maybe not kill people and everything would be
Wouldn't
fine.
That be sweet?
We could have a romantic comedy.
It'd be a great romantic comedy. I would like that a lot. See? Gotta start working the screenplay for this
one. Kevin met the bad
seed. All right, Mike. What's that? What's it called? Don't say that again. I missed that.
When Kevin met the bad seed.
when Kevin met the bad seed. Okay. All right. Well, all right. Well, that was your pick, Chris, for We Need to Talk About Kevin. Great movie. If you've never seen it, I've yet to see Lynn Ramsey's latest feature. We Were Never Really. It was, yeah, We Were Never Really Here.
You Were Never Really Here.
You Were Never Really Here.
You Were Never Really Here. Well, I was never there because I never actually saw them.
So you never really knew the name.
Yes, with Joaquin Phoenix, I know that it is probably an amazing movie. And since I still have time before December ends, before my Year of the End list comes out, I can definitely catch up on that, and I will. All right.
It's worth it. It's good.
Okay. All right. Mike, what do you have as your favorite moment from a Tilda Swinton feature?
Okay, so when thinking about any of my favorite Tilda Swinton anything, my mind immediately goes to Michael Clayton.
Of course.
Yeah, 2007, starring George Clooney, Tom Wilkinson, and, of course, Tilda Swinton. She plays a character named Karen Crowder, and this is probably my favorite role from her. She plays a woman who is trying to advance her position in a, like, giant weed killer corporation. Anyways, the whole movie, she is wrestling with her own morality and how far she's willing to go to protect her job. This is the first role where I saw her and thought to myself, oh, she's going to be huge. She's going to be a star. And what's so good about this part is she doesn't play it overly evil. She's just a scared, selfish person, right? There are two scenes in this movie that I wanted to highlight in particular. The first one is, spoilers for Michael Clayton, where her character realizes that they're not going to be able to wrangle in this lawyer and they need to take other measures, and they're going to decide to kill him. But the person that works for Tilda Swinton asks her, like, okay, what do I need to do? And she's trying to give the green light, the go-ahead, to proceed in murdering this man secretly. But she doesn't have the courage to say it. So she's trying to beat around the bush. Do you guys remember this scene at all?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I loved it. I think the way she plays it in this, like, she's scared to say it because that will make it real. You know? Like, she's almost, like, she's brand new at this and the pressure is on. And her, like, hesitation and just telling him to, you know, go ahead and go for it, I think is just masterfully performed, in my opinion.
No, I definitely see it there. Guys, it's been a long time since I saw this movie, but I do know that her hesitation made her character very vulnerable, because she is not, like you said, at all an evil person. She definitely wants to, you know, save her company and her legacy, but she definitely is not as evil as most of the other movies would make her out to be.
Right. She's definitely playing it as a very scared, confused person who is not sure she's making the right decisions.
In her head, she's still good,
right?
But she doesn't play the character as mustache twirly or anything like that.
Yes. Exactly. And so the other scene I wanted to jump off of in Michael Clayton is the final scene, the confrontation between George Clooney's Michael Clayton and Tilda Swinton's Karen Crowder.
I got your heart racing, don't I?
I don't know what the hell it is you think you're doing.
What do you think I'm doing?
The suit's over. We have a deal. Whatever that is, it's meaningless at this point.
You think? I must have gotten that wrong. I thought you had a tentative proposal. I didn't realize you'd signed all those checks. It's a drag. I got 1,000 of these things. What the hell am I going to do with them?
I'm calling Marty.
Good. Good. Do it. That's a great place to start. Let's find out who told him that Arthur was calling Anna Kaiserson. Let's find out who tapped those phones.
This memorandum, even if it's authentic, which I doubt, I highly doubt.
I know what you did to Arthur.
It's protected. It belongs to you, North.
I know you killed him.
It's a cut and dry case of attorney-client
privilege.
See,
now that's just not the way to go here, Karen. For such a smart person, you really are lost, aren't you?
This conversation is over.
I'm not the guy that you kill. I'm the guy that you buy. Are you so fucking blind you don't even see what I am? I'm the easiest part of your whole goddamn problem, and you're gonna kill me? Don't you know who I am? I'm a fixer. I'm a bag man. I do everything from shoplifting housewives to bent congressmen, and you're gonna kill me? What do you need, Karen? Lay it on me. You want a carry permit? You want a heads up on an insider trading subpoena? I sold out Arthur for 80 grand and a 3-year contract, and you're gonna kill me?
What do you want?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and he's got her set up, and he's got people listening in, like, why he's wearing a wire, you know? And she doesn't know that at this point, because he's trying to make a deal with her. And anyway, it's just like this acting off, this acting duel between George Clooney and Tilda Swinton, and he's so dominant, and I don't know. Like, it's just brilliant.
They both don't, you know, let up from each other, too. You know, she's thinking that she's going to get away with this, that, all right, at her side, she's feeling that I'm going to get clear of the situation, everything's going to be fine.
Right.
All
right,
we got this guy to play ball with us. So, in both of their minds, they're thinking that I'm going to be the winner of this confrontation.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it just totally blows up in her face. And
oh, yeah. Cause yeah. She just, as soon as she incriminates herself, George Clooney's, or Michael Clayton says, like, you're so fucked. And yeah. Her response is not immediately like, damn you, Michael Clayton, you got me. It's fear. Right? As soon as she realizes what he just said and what the implication is, before any cops even show up on the scene, she's like, what? Don't you want the money? Huh?
Yeah, the emotional range that is happening in that scene, all the different emotions that she has to play, is really spectacular.
Yeah, and you see it all in her face, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I gotta say, that is my favorite Tilda Swinton. I can't not think of Tilda Swinton without going to Michael Clayton immediately. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, goddamn. Hot day. All right. Very cool indeed. All right. So, for mine, and mine is probably going to be very kind of like cliche, but I don't care. I still think that it's a great role. I had a few other ones. I went back and forth with this one, gentlemen. I really had a hard time trying to pin down to just one performance I really liked. I liked her role a lot in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
Where she just has one small scene with Brad Pitt. I thought she was great in that. I thought she was great in Okja. But I'm going to do another movie from Bong Joon-wan. Fuck, I forgot the guy's name already. God damn it.
Bong Joon-ho?
Bong Joon-ho. Not, god damn it, me. I'm just like a complete racist on this episode, and I'm not. Bong Joon-ho, I'm going to do Snowpiercer. All right?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great one.
Going to do freaking Snowpiercer, and I'm just trying to just think of the goddamn lady's character's name. Right now.
Yeah, what is her name in that movie?
I'm just trying to look this up. See, I've got the wonderful of, like, slow internet speed and editing.
It's okay.
I got beer. Mason, she plays character Mason. She is one of the runners of the train in Snowpiercer, also called Snowpiercer. If you ever never seen Snowpiercer, Snowpiercer is about these groups. I want to say, like, refugees who live in the bottom half of this train. Apparently, the ecological disasters have happened, and now everyone boards the train, and the train just circles the globe, and they're, like, the haves and the have-nots, and Captain America himself, Chris Evans, leads this group of rebellion workers to the front of the train, and Tilda Swinton plays Mason, who is this nearsighted woman who gives this great speech about your hat belongs on the foot, not on the head. And I think that was, for me, that was probably one of the greatest speeches that I've ever seen in a movie.
Passengers, this is not you. This is disorder. This is size 10 chaos. This, see this? This is death. In this locomotive we call home, There is one thing that between our warm hearts and the bitter cold. Clothing? Shields? No. Order. Order is the barrier that holds back the frozen death. We must, all of us, on this train of life, remain in our allotted station. We must, each of us, occupy our preordained particular position. Would you wear a shoe on your head? Of course you wouldn't wear a shoe on your head. A shoe doesn't belong on your head. A shoe belongs on your foot. A hat belongs on your head. I am a hat. You are a shoe. I belong on the head. You belong on the foot. Yes? So it is. In the beginning, order was prescribed by your ticket. First class, economy, and freeloaders like you. Eternal order is prescribed by the sacred engine. All things flow from the sacred engine. All things in their place. All passengers in their section. All water flowing, all heat rising pays homage to the sacred engine. In its own particular, preordained position. So it is. Now, as in the beginning, I belong to the front. You belong to the tail. When the foot seeks the place of the head, a sacred line is crossed. Know your place. Keep your place. Be a shoe.
I love her character in this thing so much because she is just so wild and crazy. She is definitely the villain, and yet I can somewhat understand her place in this. Like, hey, everyone's got to have their place. Everyone needs to have a certain place here and there. Like, you're meant to do this. Other people are meant to do this.
Right.
You wouldn't want to put this on other pieces of your body because it wouldn't make any sense. It's probably the first time I think I laughed at her performances. She really wasn't. Now, I'm not quite sure if Burn After Reading was before or after this
movie. Oh, it was before. Burn After Reading, I'm going to say that's circa 2008.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Okay, yeah. So this is the first time I actually saw her being kind of like, well, yeah, Burn After Reading was like 2008. But still, this is probably the first movie I saw her where she's being more of like a wild character.
Yeah, this one she's almost like a crazy, like almost like a Tim Burton role.
Exactly.
Right, where yeah. Right after Reading, she's just very comedic, but it's very much a stern, normal performance in compared to what she's doing in Snowpiercer.
And I've never really laughed at her performances before because she's always very serious. Mm-hmm. She's taken, I mean, even from the very beginning of her career with like Edward II and Orlando. The only other comedic role that I've seen her in was Technolust, and that was a romantic comedy type of comedy vibe there. It's not like goofy. She's not playing. Well, in Technolust, she plays like four different characters. Like, she plays a scientist and then her four robot creations, but they're not over the top robot creations. You know, you got the shy one, the sexy one, and then there is a somewhat goofy one in there, but they were just not as fleshed out as her role as Mason in this one here. And even though she is goofy and comedic, in my mind she still is also somewhat scary as well too. And she definitely does hold her own with everyone in the cast there. And I just picked that moment when she talks about the shoe belongs on the foot, not on the hat. Oh, and she's got this buck tooth thing. Every role she does, it's hard to like almost recognize her. So I like the fact that, you know, she does stuff like this. I almost picked her role in The Grand Budapest Hotel. Yeah. And I almost was going to do the one for Trainwreck, just because it is such a out of left field thing for her to be in this goofy comedy starring, what's her face?
Amy Schumer?
Amy Schumer. You know, like, to get like this Academy Award winning actress to play what's essentially a really bit part in this movie. I mean, they could have gotten anyone to be the editor of that magazine.
Yeah, that's true. I remember thinking that as well whenever the movie was going on. I was like,
I was
what?
Surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was really shocked by that. And then, of course, we all know her for being in Doctor Strange.
Yeah. The infamous controversy around that.
Yeah, well, I thought she was just, you know, Morpheus. I thought she was just a white woman Morpheus.
Yeah, you know, I was actually, I was wondering if we were going to talk about that on this show. You know, okay. Controversy aside, right? I don't necessarily want to talk about that, but I'm not crazy about her in that movie.
You're not, okay.
Yeah, set aside all the, aside all the controversy, but it seems like she didn't bring anything to the role that someone else could not have brought.
That's true. I will agree with that right there. Yeah, I don't think she actually does anything really all that special.
Yeah, like you said, it's Morpheus. You know, I mean, it's just a wise, bald person.
Yep, like, yeah, she... It's not something that anything or anyone can play. Yeah, but that was mine right there, which is basically Snowpiercer. I kind of mentioned a few honorable mentions, but did you guys have any other honorable mentions? Maybe mention some movies of hers that we didn't mention before that we should watch?
I will say, come back to me on that one. Let me look at her.
Okay.
You go first, Chris.
I mean, Oakjaw, I think she's really great in as well. It's kind of the same type of role that she has in Snowpiercer, like these crazy characters, but she's playing these two completely different characters in that, and I think she's really great in that. She's always great in how she disappears, like you were saying earlier. She disappears in every role and is completely different people. Suspiria is another one that's just came out that we haven't mentioned yet. She plays three different roles, and one is uncredited. And she actually...
I haven't seen it, though, so don't spoil me.
Oh, well, I don't think it's spoiler. But she plays a man in it, and apparently she had a prosthesis made so that she could walk around with the penis while she played the man, too. I don't know if you...
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Dedication.
Goddamn.
Yeah.
Oh. I did like her in I Am Love, also from director... Luca Guadagnino.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up, anyway, go on. I have another one to bring up after this.
That is a great feature right there. A lot of, like, great food porn.
Yeah.
In that feature.
Luca Guadagnino is also very good with, like, saturated colors.
Yep, indeed. I also liked her in Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yep.
Yeah, she's really...
Jim Jarmusch.
Jim Jarmusch, yep. Incredible movie. I was really kind of pissed off that someone wrote a scathing review of that movie, and I remember writing a comment on, and this is like a big publisher for, like, you know, a Minneapolis newspaper too, and I just went into it too saying that, no, you kind of missing the point. This is not supposed to be a horror film. It's supposed to be a story about these two characters that can never die, and the pain they have to go through of, like, living through these generations here. It's not supposed to be a horror film. Just because it's got vampires in there doesn't mean it's a horror film.
Yeah, like, what is living that long do to someone?
Yeah, you know, the pain of that right there. I do like Okja. I thought she was great in that. Suspiria, I think, yeah, plus I mentioned just everything that...
I've got one. Have you guys seen the movie Julia from 2008?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Holy
How'd
shit.
How'd you forget about that movie, right?
How the fuck did I forget about that movie? That movie's incredible.
Yeah. That was the first time I saw her, like, carrying her own movie as, like, a leading woman. And I remember thinking, like, man, she's got it.
Okay, listeners, Julia, and I'm going to do my best to remember the plot line of this one, but Julia Tilda Swinton plays this woman who's a drunk alcoholic, and she's about to lose her job and everything. And this mother wants to pay her money to help kidnap her son. And then Tilda Swinton decides to kidnap the son from the mother and hold the son as ransom for the mother. And then she gets involved with these other criminals, and then things keep spiraling and spiraling out of control there. I think I'm saying the plot line of that correctly, but I...
That's it. You got it.
Tilda Swinton... Okay, yeah. And then she starts to develop a kind of kinship friendship with that son. And yeah, of all the movies, I'm glad she won the Academy Award for Michael Clayton, but I really secretly wished that she would have gotten a nomination for this movie.
Yeah.
Because this one, Julia, it kind of came and went.
I agree. And you know what? I'm looking at the date here. It came and went in the year 2000 and, let's see, 8. And I don't know if you remember the year 2008, but that was a pretty weak year for movies. As far as like Academy Award nominations and everything go, in my opinion, right? And I think that year could have used a little bit more Tilda Swinton love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, but Julia's amazing flick. In fact, I even tried to find that flick. This is like weeks ago, too, and I can't believe I forgot to mention it for the show, but I tried to find that on like my Vudu streaming app, and I could not find Julia on
it's
there.
It's rare. It was a rare movie even in 2008.
Oh, shit. Oh, goddamn. All right. Well, right now, and I'm just checking to see if there's any upcoming features featuring her. I know she is doing a movie called Auntie Mam. She's going to be in the new Avengers flick.
Oh, look at that. She's back as the Ancient One, doing her Morpheus thing.
Yep. Doing Morpheus, yep. Doing more of that right there. let's see now. The Souvenir is probably the next one coming out that I see. The Personal History of David Copperfield. The one thing I've saw about her that was interesting is that she was at an art museum and she was just in a glass box sleeping.
Like as an art piece or something?
As an art piece, yes. It's just Tilda Swinton in a glass box.
Not very Shia LaBeouf of her.
I know, right? And you can actually go into this museum and pay to see her
sleep.
Yeah. I don't know if I would do that.
I don't know that I wouldn't either if I was in town.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you want to do for lunch?
I would probably go see it.
Go see Tilda Swinton sleep. Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Trivia Worsens do the time. So before we kind of wrap up here, gentlemen, I guess what is the when you know that Tilda Swinton is gonna be in a movie, what is it that you expect or don't expect or just surprised about, or what is it about this actress that makes you want to watch her features? Like, if you know that she's gonna be in a movie, I mean, why do we keep coming back to this actress? And I'll start with you, Chris.
Right, she disappears in every role, and it doesn't matter whether she's doing something wacky or crazy, she buys into it, and you get to see a new character. Oftentimes with certain actors, they just kind of play the same character over and over again, right? But with Tilda Swinton, she goes the extra mile. She makes that prosthetic penis and puts it on, you know, and goes that extra mile and disappears into the character. And that is what I expect to see, is a brand new character from her and inner life. I think she's really good at depicting an inner life. She doesn't have to say anything, but just like watching her eyes, you kind of know what's going on inside. So those are the two things I expect when I go see a Tilda Swinton movie.
All right. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, so I think it is the lack of ego, or the lack of ego that comes across on the screen. Acting is in itself a very vain profession, right? So most actors that you end up seeing or that end up making it, their goal is to take on roles that make them look good or showcase what is good about them. Tilda Swinton doesn't, I mean, she's not a beautiful woman, right? She's unique looking, and she uses that. She leans into roles where she purposely looks unattractive. She'll gain weight for a role. She's not at all vain about how she comes across. It's entirely about the art. And, you know, a lot of actors do that, but, like, it's not like Charlize Theron having to put on 8 hours of makeup every day to make herself look ugly to get an Academy Award, right? Like, Tilda Swinton, she just goes for those kinds of awards anyway. Or, I mean, she goes for those kinds of roles anyway, you know? She doesn't really... I don't know, she doesn't choose fluff. You know what I mean? Like, she chooses stuff that challenges her and will not make her necessarily look the best.
I like that. I like that largely, and I've kind of read interviews with her saying that she never actually chooses a role. Like, she's not like acting, she never really wanted to be an actor. And she just kind of like just dives into a character fully without really thinking about how it's going to affect.
Yeah, she likes to show warts and all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Very cool.
What about you?
Oh, for me, when I find out that she's going to be in a movie, I like being surprised because I don't know exactly what it's going to be. Because she, like, in Suspiria, different roles right there, and, like, I had no idea that she was playing different parts of this until close to the very end, and then I kind of saw one moment where I looked at their eyes, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's her playing these two different roles.
Like, wait a minute, what's going
Holy
on
shit.
Here?
Oh, but she'd be in movies where she can look very beautiful. I thought she looked very beautiful in Burn After Reading.
Or I Am Love.
And Metro Clayton. I Am Love. Definitely I Am Love right there.
She has really wonderful pastel colored dresses on in that movie. I was actually just watching some clips of it before this episode, just to catch up. She looks quite lovely in that movie.
Very much so. Even like The Deep End. And then she has movies such as like Doctor Strange. And what's that other flick? The Grand Budapest Hotel, Snowpiercer, where she actually is playing these all-out strange characters. And that's the thing, too. I just never know what she's going to be in. In fact, one of the first podcast shows I ever did, me and my co-host were talking, and we're mentioning, like, what's an actress that most people will not find attractive that you find attractive? And my first thought was Tilda Swinton.
Interesting.
All right. I just find that girl to be just really strangely erotic right there. All right. And I will go to my grave saying that.
You will die on that hill.
I just find that. I do. She is just like this. She's like this other species.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, she's like this weird, like, androgynous. Like, she doesn't even seem human or, like, have a specific gender sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just like she's just this actor.
Yeah. I was actually thinking to myself earlier today, like, what role would I want to see her play? And I thought she could play David Bowie in his
bio.
That's true. He actually sent that to me earlier today, that he did not make that up.
Yeah. Yeah, so she should totally play David Bowie.
Kate Blanchett did it with Bob Dylan.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember that movie, A Bigger Splash?
I was going to ask if you'd seen that, speaking of Luca Guadagnino.
I have seen the movie, and she plays like this rock star, this glam rock star. And when I first saw trailers of that, I really thought that it was a David Bowie story.
Red.
Like, the very beginning of the trailer, it shows her short hair wearing like this glam, outrageous outfit that you would see like David Bowie wear. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a David Bowie biopic with Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, sign me up.
In this day and age of like biopics with like Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocketman, we could get a David Bowie biopic, And if you get Luca Guadagnino and Tilda Swinton to tell the David Bowie story, get a really good screenwriter, you could actually have someone that's good. And I don't want a movie that's marketed to the masses as much as Bohemian Rhapsody was. So, yeah. But I would be very, very excited to see where it goes with that.
You know what that reminds
fact,
me of?
I'm going to put my foot down right now and say if Tilda Swinton doesn't play David Bowie in the biopic, I'm not going to see it. I'm not going to go.
You know what this conversation reminds me of? Is it reminds me of something that Quentin Tarantino said once about biopics, which is that generally he doesn't like them. He thinks trying to, like, and I agree with him, is why I bring it up. I think trying to fit huge, like, decades of someone's life into a 2.5 hour movie, it never seems organic or like a fluid thing. It just kind of seems fake. I think, though, what would be really cool is if they did something where, like, Tilda Swinton played David Bowie, but only for like a certain time period within his life. You know what I mean? Like, this, she plays David Bowie, like, on a specific tour or as a specific album is coming out or something like that. That way it only has to cover a certain amount of time. And she can just kind of like spend time acting instead of, you know, trying to perfect every moment of David Bowie's life in broad strokes in a screenplay.
Fair enough there. You know, how about this? Just have Tilda Swinton go on tour as David Bowie and just do his songs.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Perfect.
Be down for that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I do want to say thank you, gentlemen, for coming on here and talking about Tilda Swinton. I don't know any last thoughts about Tilda Swinton.
Come back to me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
No, I think I've covered everything I need to about Tilda Swinton. She's a great actress and probably deserves more Oscars than she already has. Any year with Tilda Swinton, love is good.
I kind of like, you know, think that she's an actress that people like us that watch films, we love her and things, but she's not really mainstream love. Like, not as much as, like, Cate Blanchett's love. You know, I think people know more about Cate Blanchett than Tilda Swinton. And I'm not trying to say one actress is better than the other, because they're both amazing. And I want them to play either outlaw criminals trying to escape the law or, like, badass cops. I want to see it. Here's what I want to see. I want to see a remake of Tango and Cash.
Oh, sweet.
With Cate Blanchett and Tilda Swinton.
You're saying all the right things right now. Tango and Cash is a highly underrated movie, in my opinion.
Exactly, all right.
Yeah, I would actually like to see Tilda Swinton in a Western.
Oh, shit.
I would like to see Tilda Swinton do something where she's a gunslinger. Or, you know, I want to see her, like, starring in a Western. I think that would be rad.
Damn right. I love that. Oh, shit. Man. Chris, what do you want to see her in?
Yeah, a Western would definitely be awesome. A Coen Brothers Western, though, more specifically.
Yeah, she's got a relationship with those guys.
Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah? That's true.
Yeah, she could hang out with Frances McDormand in a Western.
Yeah.
That's another great combination.
That is a great combination, isn't it?
But
I wonder, is it going to be a goofy comedy or is it going to be like a serious comedy? Or serious movies? Are they going to do the serious drama or goofy comedy?
I feel like those two could do whatever they wanted.
True.
Frances McDormand is hilarious when she wants to be, but we also know from Three Billboards that she's got the drama chops too.
Yeah. That's true. Shit. Oh, too many scenes here. No. All right. Well, fair enough there. I think we said that the movies that we want to see her in, we mentioned our favorite moments there. Guys, tell me, what is going to be coming up on the Casual Cinecast podcast?
All right. So next week, we are putting out an episode on the new Alfonso Cuarón Netflix film, Roma.
Oh, I can't wait to see
that. Yeah, we recently got to check it out in theaters in its limited run. Ooh. So we're very grateful, and we want to go ahead and get an episode out before it hits Netflix, like on the 14th or something.
Oh, gosh. Oh, can't wait to see that. Now, I mentioned your Twitter, Casual Cinecast. Are you guys on any other social media platforms? Did I say it all?
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at Casual Cinecast. So it's all pretty easy to find us. So don't be a stranger.
Check out all their episodes, new, old. All right. Give them a like. Give them a follow. As for Cinema Recall, we are on Twitter at @cinema_recall. But that's it for right now. I'm the Vern. I'm going to sign off on here. Shout out and thanks to you, Chris and Mike, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
All right. You guys have been very insightful, very intelligent, and you made me sound like I'm a smarter person.
Well, thank you. You made us sound smart as well, hopefully.
All right. All right. Well, good day, everyone. We'll see you all next week. All right.
Have a good one.